Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. I'm Grant Reher. My guest today is Chris Libinati. He's the managing editor of Central Current, an online media outlet in Central New York. He also has experience as a crime and politics reporter at the Syracuse Post-Standard. Chris, welcome to the program. It's good to have you on.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's good to talk to you, Grant.
You bet. So let me just start with some real basic stuff. We'll get into Central Current in a second, but let's just start with the context and the landscape that things like Central Current are entering into. Remind our listeners what's happened to local news coverage of public issues in recent years in Syracuse, but all over. I think the same phenomenon has happened. Just bring us up to date on that.
Yeah. All over the country, I mean, you know, for decades now, local newspapers have closed or shrunk. It can be the Syracuse Post-Standard, but it's also Rochester Democrat and Chronicle, Buffalo News. And, you know, it's not just in New York, it's everywhere. And there are communities all over the country, often smaller communities who are losing, you know, just simple local papers that, you know, even had only three or four reporters before, and now you have none. Central Current, you know, kind of grew out of a national effort. It grew from locally, but out of a national effort to expand reporting in communities that need more of it. And then, frankly, all communities need more reporting. This is not just a Syracuse issue. This is a nationwide issue. Local newspapers are closing nationally.
Yeah, I have a couple colleagues that study the media, and they've really driven this point home when I have heard them speak. So, in fact, you know, you hear this phrase food desert a lot, but then you have these small towns that you were talking about that are being called news deserts. And I think what you spoke to illustrates that. So I'm going to go now to Syracuse, and I'm going to make a confession here publicly. But one of my slight irritations over the years is the Post-Standard's apparent reluctance to acknowledge that they've cut back on their local and regional news coverage in recent decades. Instead, they often point to, hey, we've got added content on our website, and, you know, this is really, it's better somehow. It seems a bit misleading to me. But anyway, you had some experience at the Post-Standard before you took on this position. I would be very interested to hear your views more specifically on how, because they're the, you know, they're the big players in our market, obviously, how their local news, especially public and political affairs news coverage, has changed in recent years.
You know, honestly, so I started there in December 2017.
So a lot of this stuff had already happened.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I was at Syracuse University in Newhouse while it was changing. And honestly, you know, I think I missed out on it in the way that like the local reader got to see it, right? Because, you know, during layoffs and cutbacks, I just wasn't as avid of a reader of the Post-Standard. I was probably more reading the Democrat and Chronicle in Rochester, because I'm from Rochester.
Okay.
And I used to take the newspaper to school every morning with me while I was in elementary school. So, I think, though, like what has happened at the Post-Standard, you know, Post-Standard cut early, right? They saw the tide coming, and not the Post-Standard, really Advanced Media and the Newhouse family. And in some ways they were ahead of the curve in cutting, right? Because now newspapers are, you know, you see it at the Buffalo News, right? They're doing their cutting now. I think in some ways it's like, it was take your medicine then or take your medicine now. And that's not to say that, it's just unfortunate that that's happened. And I think that the truth is, you know, in some ways, what you don't necessarily very obviously lose like common council coverage or legislature coverage. You lose issues coverage in some ways, right? Like you think about, you know, I was talking to someone like the Post-Standard years and years ago had a labor reporter. Probably before I was born, honestly. And someone was complaining to me about that at one point. You know, obviously we have Sean Kirsten, and you know, that wasn't a cut, you know, but Sean did leave, and I think that was a loss to the community. I think that it's not necessarily the people that work there and the reporters that work there, but just in aggregate resources.
Right.
And I think that Yeah, I can tell more of a broad story than a specific one, but I think, though, I will say, and one of the benefits of the post standard late, I do think things have been very consistent since 2017, and that
Okay.
is the benefit of having taken kind of the medicine, so to speak, in the early 2010s, I'd say, is that
Yeah.
it has steadied. And you know, there is, I guess there's something to be said for that, right?
Yeah, no, it makes sense. I hadn't really thought about it that way, but you're right. I didn't know that the post standard had done this earlier than everybody else, but and then they cut back to the 3 days of sort of a genuinely new paper. Yeah, but it's been steady since then. Well, so let's then transition from that into Central Current. So give us a brief history of Central Current. You were present at the founding. What do you see as Central Current's place in the local media landscape, and what was the history of its story and its founding?
Yeah, so the organization started with the board. So, you know, a couple of our founders, Tony Malavenda, Larry Bousquet, got together, and I guess Tony was like, you know, Tony Malavenda was somewhat unaware of the movement in nonprofit news, and he had kind of gone to this group of people that he knew, and he was like, you know, maybe this could be a nonprofit. And lo and behold, there's nonprofits all over the country, all over the place. And it gave them a bit of a blueprint, right? It made it a little more simple to kind of get that started. They hired Julie McMahon, former editor, also a colleague, former colleague at the Post Standard, to kind of get it rolling.
And I spoke to her when it was just starting up. So
Yeah.
you're kind of like the second chapter now, but go
Yep.
ahead.
And so I came over because, you know, what I told one of my editors when I was leaving, one of my editors at the Post Standard was, you know, and I was just kind of like, I want a bit of a feel like a college newsroom, and not in all the college aged, you know, activities or whatever, but trying things out. You know, that was what, when I was at the Daily Orange, you know, it was like, can we just do a story this way because we say so, you know? And I think in legacy media, you get locked into, well, we are the paper of record and we need to look and act like the paper of record. And that is not to say that we don't hold ourselves to a very high standard, but that is to say that that very high standard does not have to be a barrier to creativity. And to exist and to succeed, we have to be creative. And I think it was both freeing and backing myself into a corner where, no, I have to be creative. It is innovate or kind of die out, right? That is the mentality. And I wanted that, you know, that was a challenge to me. There is something to being the first reporter somewhere, and that's what I was. I was going to set the tone for who we wanted to be, even without editing power, right? Or editing responsibility. And that's how I got here. And I think probably telling people that I wanted a feel of a college newsroom maybe was not the way I should have said it, because like back then, because it's just a hard feeling to capture if you haven't been there recently. And, you know, when I left, I guess I'd been out of the DO for 7-ish years, or yeah, five-ish years. And I thought that there were things that we did there that could apply to a professional. I mean, they're a professional newsroom, but a you know, something like a nonprofit.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. And you're still here,
Still here.
and you don't look too hungover to me, so I don't think you've
No.
gone in the bad direction there.
Yeah.
I'm Grant Reher, and you're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. My guest is Chris Libinati. He's the managing editor of the media outlet Central Current. So you mentioned Malavenda and Bousquet. Where does your funding come from now?
Yes, we have a bunch of different places, but so it's about, we think about it on the business side. Maximilian Eiley, our executive director, thinks about it in about four pillars. So it's
Okay.
a grant funding, sponsorships, major donors, and then grassroots donors, which is like membership, or, you know, we don't have subscriptions necessarily, but that would be the small dollar donors, however you want
Sure.
to frame it.
And what would be the relative size of these
Yeah.
pillars? And where does some of that grant funding come from?
Yeah. So major donors in grant funding tend to be the, for us, tend to be the bigger fund, I can't give you a percent off the top of my head, but those tend to be where much of our funding comes from. But we have support from the Gifford Foundation, Community Foundation, Central New York Community Foundation, the Allen Foundation. For a long time, we've gotten support from the Inasmuch Foundation, which is they had a national investigative reporting grant, and they're based out of Oklahoma. And then we've received some national dollars. I think we're Report for America, the Miami Foundation, which is a big journalism funder. So our foundation contributions come from all over the country, mostly in Central New York, though.
Yeah, interesting. And
So,
so let's think about the last year and the outlet, Central Current. What do you think you would view as some of your greatest hits in the last year, or maybe specific areas? You mentioned topics before where you've concentrated a lot of coverage that is relatively missing elsewhere.
I think that the place I want to start here with Patrick McCarthy's reporting on whether it's transparency or the budget or surveillance at the Common Council. I definitely think that the Common Council and the in-city issues are the Post Standard's bread and butter in some ways. Like they do genuinely great work on city issues, but I think that where we contributed was like, what is the problem? Like, all these, whether it's lead in the water or what have you, like those issues are critical, but also process matters. Like, how do we arrive at the decisions by which we fund the efforts to fix these issues? And Pat did some really great work around the budget and transparency, meeting the council meeting with all nine members in a caucus meeting, which, there is some case law out there that says that that is improper. Not making a budget report that you commissioned public before you vote on the budget. Those are very basic good government type issues that I think we dominated. But then, Pat has also led on surveillance coverage broadly, whether that's the police department's use of drones, license plate readers. And it's not that, there one answer to those questions is right or wrong, but process matters. You create these processes to evaluate these technologies, and did we go through them? What is it? Who is advocating for and against them? It sounds very basic. It's very basic, and it could, the way I'm describing it, could make your eyes glaze over. But it's like some of the most critical. It's demonstrative of how business happens, and so. Or city business happens, and I think his coverage on those issues has been really critical, has been really important. But from very specific kind of like stories, I think the our most read story and my personal favorite story that I got to write last year was called the before I called or we titled it Before the Deportation, which caught Jeremy Dotton Reyna kind of as he was preparing to self-deport after ICE had followed him from his home to work. And it was the first reporting on that issue. Rick Reyna, his husband, owned Syracuse Soap Works. And what, our place in that story was to capture a deportation as it's in progress, essentially, which I've not really seen anywhere else in the, I mean, it's a hard thing to capture, right? Like someone has to tip you off that's happening. Someone has to open up. You have to, be there for it. And it was the first reporting on that incident. And I thought it was like, obviously I'm speaking about my own work, so I'm trying to have some humility here, but I thought it was powerful in what it showed. And everyone followed that story, right? The Post Standard followed that story, CNY Central, local SYR. And it wasn't just because it was about a business owner, it was because of the time and place and how it happened. Try to make sure I catch everyone's work here. Laura Robertson on naturalization ceremonies being canceled. I think we were the first around here to report that.
Yeah, I saw that one.
It's an important story. It's not just about whether or not the net thing happens, right? Where people become citizens. It's about the chaos that kind of gets caused around that process. And then throw one more in there. Our reporting on the payroll modernization snafu with the city, which resulted in some questions around about how $10 million got spent by the city. Again, process, right? Process was a big part of that. And result too. And we'll be covering the results, you know, as more payroll software gets instituted. But that drove some conversation around the mayoral election. So,
Yeah, I remember that conversation for sure. You're
yes.
listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. I'm Grant Reher, and I'm talking with Chris Libinati. The former Syracuse Post-Standard reporter is the managing editor of Central Current, a central New York media outlet, and we've been discussing that organization. So we before the break, you were talking about some of the greatest hits, the stories that you guys brought to the foreground in the last year that were important. And I remember when I was talking to your maybe your predecessor, or I don't know what exactly her role was, but the original founder, Julie, you mentioned her. One of the things that she said years ago was that the intention was, among other things, to make arts an area of particular concern for the organization. Just wondering if that is something that has continued and if you still think about that today.
I think it's a long-term goal. And I think that one of the things we realized over time, right? We do reader surveys, and people wanted more politics coverage, news coverage, hard-hitting coverage. And you know, I think that we've definitely turned more toward that for sure. We've tried to balance it a little bit with Sean Kearse, and obviously that's not the arts. I think that's more culture. In fact, you know, the way I look at culture, right, is fabric of the community. Like, are we are we getting to stories about that? And I'd point to a lot of the work Sean's done, but also Pat McCarthy on the Onondaga Nation's reintroduction of the buffalo and stuff like that. It's not true arts coverage, but it is culture coverage. And I think that it's something that we'd like to sustain in time. But I think we realize that to make ourselves truly indispensable, we have to be able to do the hard hitting coverage well.
Okay. And I'm very curious to know what, in your experience with this organization, has been the biggest challenges you faced? Because it's not easy what you guys have done. So what have been the biggest challenges in both growing the effort and sustaining it? And how did you go about addressing them?
I think first and foremost, explain to people why it's important to pay money to get this. And I know that you probably read quite frequently but there are people who read less frequently and who see this as important, but then also are, you know, like, why should I give my $5, $10, $100 toward this effort? And I think explaining that importance is one of the hardest things, because there are a lot of great social service organizations around Syracuse that do important work to keep kids clothed, fed, what have you. And, you know, it's much easier to part with $5 or $10 to do something like that than to, I think, read about all the city and county problems, you know? And I think learning how to show people that, in fact, this work buttresses the work that other people do. It's not as much of a challenge in terms of, like, how do we do it? It's just that knowing that people need that explanation is the first step. The only way that you can fix a problem is to know you have it, right? And to not have enough reporting kind of, like, feeds these other problems. So explaining that to folks, kind of getting them on that same playing field, that's probably, like, that first step. I know it sounds like a very broad, unspecific problem, but it is so critical to explaining what we do. And then, you know, simply, like, making sure that philanthropy and not, whether that's foundations or, you know, can sustain Max and I talk all the time, like, what is sustainable here? What is the level we can get to? What is a this year goal and a 5 years down the line goal? You know, I think we've gotten into a place where we feel really comfortable. Right. Too comfortable or anything like
right,
that.
right.
But,
Complacent.
Not complacent. But at the same time, we're like, okay, today and tomorrow, you know, the today's and tomorrow problems are kind of, like, slowly fading. It's more like, you know, how do we make it grow? Early on, it was like, who are we going to be? I think that was the real problem when I started, you know, and in some ways we've figured out who we are. And that is only through consistently writing. We can only do that by telling stories in the similar way time and time again. You kind of, I think people generally know what they're going to get from us now, which is not true. That was not true when I, in June of 2022, when I started publishing my first stories. And in some ways, we are a very different organization today than we were then. We had to let ourselves grow a little bit and figure out who we were, to be able to tell people who we are. That's, you can't really tell a story about yourself unless you have like a coherent version of that. So, I think that was one of the other challenges that we've since tackled, but it's always a consistent thing because you still have to tell those stories the same way going forward.
Sure. If you just joined us, you're listening to the Campbell Conversations. I'm Grant Reher, and my guest is Chris Libinati, the managing editor of Central Current. This one may be a little bit of a, I don't know, nasty question, but I feel like I have to ask it. Along the way, did you get support or resistance or neither from the Post Standard and Syracuse.com?
I think we just coexist is
Okay.
my answer. We have, I think if you read all of our stories, we love to give everyone credit when they report something before we do. I think that's really important. That's ethical. That's the right thing to do. You will find their links throughout our work, and we will always do that because it's important for the reader. They should know source material, right? We don't operate in a vacuum, and neither do they. And I think that that's a critical thing to understand if you're an editor of a publication, if you're a reporter at a publication. And so we make every effort to make clear that, there's another news organization in town and they're doing critical work too. We would never short someone on their work because
You are a very diplomatic editor. I can tell that because I will maybe say this for you. I don't know, but I will say it's been my experience. One of the things I would knock them on a little bit is acknowledging other outlets. It's almost like if it didn't happen there, it didn't exist. And but you're articulating a different way to see things. You're not making that criticism. I said it, not you. But anyway, yeah, very diplomatic. Let me ask you this. Do you have an idea what stories you're going to be Central Current is going to be focusing on next year? I do get the Post Standard every Sunday, and they did, they put out like, here are the 10 things we think people need to be following. Do you have an idea of what you guys are going to do?
Yeah, so I have, so ha I think we were just talking. We were talking to our reporters about this, with Max about this. What are we really? Who are we going to be in 2026? And I think housing has always been important to us. The policy side of housing, I think that will be important again.
I think it's
Down
going to
the
be
road,
critical. Yeah.
yes, it's always critical. And I think that housing has been an issue here since I was in college. I remember when Matthew Desmond, the author of a book of Evicted, came to speak at SU, and that was when I was a student, and we still see a lot of housing being such a critical issue. So that will be in the mix as one of our kind of like big issues. But I think beyond that, elections will be big, and
Sure.
everything that we talk about other than housing, or including housing and some of these other issues, will affect elections. But NY22 is on the table. County ledge again is on the table, statewide offices. So, I think that's going to be a big focus for us. And beyond that, we're trying to figure out how to move our resources around to make sure that immigration is a consistent issue that we cover.
Good. Yeah.
It's one of it's the issue kind of our time in some ways, right? The last couple of years, at least, the last year. The Post Standard has done some great reporting on immigration, and there can only be more great reporting on immigration. I think that whether it's policy or the human side of stories, I think it's those that's really critical. And so yeah, those are, I'd say, three of the biggest issues that we're going to hit this year.
Good. Those are good choices, it strikes me. Well, we've got about 2 minutes left, and I want to try to squeeze in two questions if I could. They may be a little bit different from the other ones, but and this first one may be hard for you, but if I wanted to get your take on this. If you had to pick one journalist in Syracuse, now I recognize that you, as you said, you arrive here at the university doing my math around 2013. But if you, based on your knowledge and your historical knowledge you've developed since then, if you had to pick one journalist in Syracuse who's been most integral to the life, the understanding, and even the success of the area working in any of the mediums, who would it be?
Well, that's tough. I am. So I'm going to, can I give you like a 1A and 1A, 1B?
Is yeah, yeah, sure. Absolutely. Just do it quickly.
Yeah. Sean Kirst, without a doubt. I'm going to give you my favorite, and that's John O'Brien. When I was in college, I read John O'Brien, and I respect the work he's done. He was so critical to what the Post Standard did, and I just loved his work.
Remind us what his beat was.
Yeah, so John was an investigative reporter. He did investigations on the Onondaga County District Attorney's Office.
I remember that one.
Yeah. Murder case up in Oswego.
Oh, yeah.
He did some incredible work around that, but mostly around, you know, coverage of policing and stuff like that. And he was incredible. And
so. Okay. And then the last one, I'm only literally giving you two or three sentences.
Okay.
But big picture, looking forward, future media landscape in Syracuse. Are we going to see more central currents? It's hard for me to imagine, giving all the funding challenges. What do you think is going to happen in the next 10 years or so?
Yeah, that's a great question. My biggest hope is that what's here grows. That's all of us. I think that keeping it at the level it's at right now is probably most likely, but hopefully we grow and do more great work.
No, certainly we want to avoid becoming a news desert, that's for sure. Yes. So that was Chris Libinati. Chris, I want to thank you again for making the time to speak with me. And I also want to wish you good luck in continuing to develop this media outlet. I think it is important. And again, it's called Central Current. I think the area needs all the help it can get. So thanks so much.
Awesome. Thank you, Grant.
You bet. You've been listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media, conversations in the public interest.
The Campbell Conversations, Conversations in the Public Interest, is hosted and produced by Grant Reher. The program is edited by Mark Lebonier. The Campbell Conversations is a joint production of the Campbell Public Affairs Institute at Syracuse University's Maxwell School of Citizenship and WRVO Public Media. To learn more about the program and hear previous interviews, visit wrvo.org/Campbell Conversations.